Good morning, everyone. We welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion. With the subject of substance. We're grateful you all could join us on this beautiful day. The Plainfield Science Church Independent in Plainfield, New Jersey, which is in the United States of America. And we welcome you all. We will start with our morning prayer.
I'm reading from page 5 of Addenda to Collectania. The infinite light forever protects its ideas in the substance of soul. Man was never educated to believe in nor rely on false theology or materia medica to heal and save him. Man relies entirely upon the principle of being for health, supply, happiness. Evil minds have no power to reject, deny, oppose, or defy God. No power to stop the work of Christian Science. There is a spiritual reversal for every argument of evil, and to declare it agrees with your adversary quickly. God will reverse every argument of evil before it reaches us through the word, which is the two-edged sword, which liveth and abideth forever. We must be spiritual detectives and arrest every thought that tries to gain admission and cast it out when the idea tries to present itself. There is a perfect presentation for every idea of love. We must think of ourselves as spiritual and perfect. Our sight, hearing, and all of our senses and faculties are spiritual, perfect, and eternal. For God created all. Mary Baker Eddy.
Wonderful. Thank you. Thank you. Some of that would be good for watches, too.
Yeah. I love that, spiritual detective.
Yeah. Beautiful. Thank you. All right, Karen, our watching point.
Watching point 317. Watch lest you become discouraged and feel that your work in sweeping the leaves off your sidewalk has availed nothing, because there is a fresh lot waiting for you the next morning. You are expected to continue your sweeping cheerfully until the trees have shed all their leaves. The evidence of your problem may appear to be the same day after day, but if you do your work faithfully each day, you have done what God requires of you, and the error is handled. If the same evidence appears tomorrow, regard it as a fresh crop of fears, and not the old ones you handled yesterday. Then you will have the faith to work on without discouragement until the tree of error is bare. If you shot an enemy that approached your home, and the next day he appeared again, you would conclude that your aim was poor. Let us assume that this continues for 100 days, until you have lost all faith in your gun or your ability to aim it. Then one morning, no enemy appears. You venture forth only to find 100 dead men. Each shot reached its mark. Each day the enemy was a new one, but he dressed up in the clothes of the old one in order to produce discouragement. The master said, quote, "He that shall endure to the end, the same shall be saved," end quote.
Thank you. That was one of our old favorites that watch. Thank you. All right, comments?
Well, I looked up the word endure because sometimes that word can seem, I don't know, hard. And right. I got a wonderful definition of it. To bear with patience, to remain. And then I love this one, to abide. So we know, you know, we're told here to stay in the Father's house abide with me, abide in my one-ment with God. So I said, he that shall abide in that one-ment with God to the end, the same shall be saved. And that changed the word endure for me.
Thank you. That's beautiful. Thank you. Yeah, that's a lot of what we're going to be talking about today, too. It's interesting how these subjects take various turns. Anyone else on this watching point?
Well, I loved that watching point. I had never heard it before, and it just made me think of just staying in the now, for one thing.
Yes, not looking backwards or forwards.
Mm-hmm. It's the newness. Yes.
Betty?
Yes, I just thought it was so encouraging because occasionally we get something that seems to go on for a while, and it just says to keep it up. You know, it's gonna. There's an end to it, and you should be encouraged and keep up the good work and don't let down.
Thank you. Yeah, Mrs. Eddy says truth persists, error does not. So we must be the persister in truth.
Long suffering is one of the fruit of the Spirit.
Thank you. Yes. Long suffering is one of the fruits of the Spirit.
If you want easy, you should go elsewhere.
Yeah. No one said this was easy.
And also, cause instead of effect, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Who else was speaking?
I was. I think also, you know, to be discouraged is the easiest thing to, you know, make you not start to question everything and the truth, especially that you're using. I like what Kratzer writes, Reverend Kratzer, that is, writes about discouragement. It's his priciest item.
Right.
Reason. Mm-hmm. You know, it's so easy to be discouraged if you here again, oh my gosh. And then you get all discouraged and, you know, you want to give up. How can you give up? So I think it's important to stay. But I also love Martha Wilcox's article. It's on the carousel about having the correct viewpoint. Because if you have that and you determine never to swerve from it, then you're seeing, even though you're being presented with all these false pictures, you don't swerve from the perfection, the spiritual perfect viewpoint that Jesus used.
Thank you. Beautiful. Yes. Yes. And I think it was years ago, I believe it was Shahida, she sent us that article. It must be from Kratzer about the devil's favorite tool.
Yeah. Oh, the devil's auction.
Yeah, the devil's auction. Yeah. He would sell everything, but he didn't want to sell discouragement because...
it was a wedge.
It was a wedge, mm-hmm. Yeah. That was how he could get into it. He could do great mischief with discouragement. It's a good article, and it is on our website.
Yeah.
The devil's auction. Anyone else? Well, this is a very highly important watching point, which is, I guess, why we would get it so often. But I can say from my own experience, day after day after day, thinking I was making absolutely no progress. And then it is like unwinding a terrible chain full of kinks and chinks. But eventually it just all opens up. And it will. And it is so true. It's not the same problem. You just keep working at it every day. And it's encouraging to know it's not. And each day you're clearing off more leaves from your path and making progress. And Mrs. Eddy says, if you are striving and working, you are making progress. Never, ever doubt that. It's only when you stop, when you don't strive, you don't pray, you just, oh, well, whatever. Then probably you're backsliding. But as long as you're working at it, and it doesn't matter what the physical evidence appears to be, you are making progress.
And you know about this? It's almost like the frozen river.
Yes.
Also on our website.
Thank you. Yes, the frozen river, beautiful. The sun would keep shining on that ice. Then it would seem at night it would build up again, then the sun would come out again. Eventually, the it all breaks up and floats away freely. Ingrid?
And about, thank you. And about the devil's auction, we can replace that with anything, discouragement, but we can say hatred. We can say dishonesty, whatever. It's been so wonderful to replace that with any other error. It works.
Yes. That's it. So we're not fooled by the negative suggestions, as has been brought out often, but the mortal mind is a killer. That was Mrs. Evans who told us that. It will kill. You don't want to get into those things that mortal mind says, whether it's discouragement, negativity, doubt, fear, hatred, lust, whatever.
Apathy.
Whole list of them. When you start feeling that way, okay, rouse yourself and get out of it quickly. Okay, who wanted to speak?
No, I was just going to say that's why Mrs. Eddy talks a lot about persistence. You know, and it's just like with anything in life, if you do something once, it doesn't really make you the master of it. It doesn't make you the master of your profession or your sport or anything else. You have to continually work and be persistent at whatever you do. And then that, you know, that's how you become a master of it.
Thank you very much, because that leads into really what this lesson is going to be mainly about, persistence. Wasn't sure how it ties in with substance, but it does actually. It ties in very well with substance. So thank you.
Life, truth, and love are substance, and truth persists, and error does not.
Yes. So the word substance, what does that sort of mean to you?
The enduring.
Enduring
that can't be, you know, there's no decay, there's no destruction. It's immortal, immutable. It just cannot be destroyed. It's just forever. And that which is material is not that.
Thank you.
So the enduring substance, yeah.
Yes, and that, you know, that's science and health. Number one, substance is that which is eternal and incapable of discord and decay. And it goes on. Thank you. And anyone else on what substance means to them?
Well, I was thinking this week about how before I came to Plainfield, I had gone a few years being quasi-atheist, I guess. And during that time, I felt like I was getting emptier and emptier. Everything was getting darker. Everything was getting emptier. And then I came here and it like completely reversed. So that's how I think about substance and why there is nothing the other way.
Thank you. That's beautiful.
Well, that's good. Yeah, because really, substance is what everything is made out of. Right? If something is made out of something substantial, it isn't made.
Well, it's interesting because looking up at the definition of it, especially in the more modern dictionaries, it will say substance is material, matter. Mm-hmm. But the 1828 says that which really is, what really exists. And something real, not imaginary. And then also means of living, goods. And we do often think of as our substance, as our supply. So all these things are substance. But what I really love, and I'm going to read this to you, from Unity of Good, pages 60 and 61, Mrs. Eddy. Mortal mind is a kingdom divided against itself. With the same breath, he articulates truth and error. We say that God is all, and there is none beside him, and then talk of sin and sinners as real. We call God omnipotent and omnipresent, and then conjure up from the dark abyss of nothingness a powerful presence named evil. We say that harmony is real and inharmony is its opposite and therefore unreal, yet we descant upon sickness, sin, and death as realities. With the tongue, bless we God, even the Father, and therewith curse we men who are made after the similitude human concept of God. Out of the same mouth proceedeth blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be so. It's James 3. Mortals are free moral agents to choose whom they would serve. If God, then let them serve him, and he will be unto them all in all. If God is ever present, he is neither absent from himself nor from the universe. Without him, the universe would disappear and space, substance, and immortality be lost. St. Paul says, and if Christ be not raised, your faith is in vain. Ye are yet in your sins. It's 1 Corinthians. Christ cannot come to mortal and material sense, which sees not God. And then this false sense of substance must yield to his eternal presence and so dissolve. Rising above the false to the true evidence of life is the resurrection that takes hold of eternal truth. Coming and going belong to mortal consciousness. God is the same yesterday and today and forever. Now that is a complete description of really what substance is as compared to what it is not. And that statement, the bottom of page 60, Mrs. Evans had given it to us many times, or to me. I know one time when I had a very bad congestion. This false sense of substance must yield to his eternal presence and so dissolve. So I'd ask myself, well, what is my false sense of substance? Well, and we all have a lot of them, but this one certainly brings out when you believe evil is real, right? Mm-hmm. It's powerful. Mm-hmm. That's your false sense of substance. That statement and this understanding and unity of good will heal a lot of situations that maybe you need a breakthrough on. And then, coming and going belong to mortal consciousness. God is the same yesterday and today and forever. It's another one statement of truth that we've been given often. Again, do you come and go, or one day you're feeling great, yippee, ahoo, I'm feeling good. The next day, oh my God, this is horrible. I'm having a terrible time. No, that's not the reflection we talked about last week. That's the ups and downs of mortal mind. And then this, again, this goes back to the idea that some of you, Lenny and some others, spoke about persistence, because God is the same yesterday, today, and forever. The question is, are you the same with him? Are you the same? Are you going up and down and here and there and everywhere? So that, yes, that idea of persistence is very important to bring about through substance, whether you need it for supply or health or whatever thing you need. As we talked about last week, being tributary to God, he is the source of all good, so we are receiving it from him always. And if we think we're not, or we're deluded into thinking we're not, and that word delude means to think something is true that isn't true, and that you hang on to it even though you know it's false. Are you deluded into thinking that you're not tributary to God for some reason? And if you are, it's because you haven't spent enough time with the Father. You spent too much time with mortal mind and the things of the world. So My father, and I've told this to you before, but my father had this quote on his desk. It's Calvin Coolidge. And a lot of you probably already know it. But nothing in this world can take the place of persistence. Talent will not. Nothing is more common than unsuccessful men with talent. Genius will not. Unrewarded genius is almost a proverb. Education will not. The world is full of educated derelicts. Persistence and determination alone are omnipotent. It's interesting he uses the word omnipotent, but persistence and determination. Now, just in my casual observance in the world, I would say all these things he said is very true. You know, talent, genius, education, that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to do anything useful for mankind. Now, this is a little bit, you know, it could be on a human. It can't be a human will of, I'm going to do this no matter what. It's got to be a God-inspired, I'm going to do this no matter what. Must be God-inspired. Love illumines, inspires, illumines, designates, and leads the way. And that is in the lesson this week. And I love that. Those qualities are needed and all inspired by love, not human will. So, Jeremy, will you read the golden text?
1 Corinthians. Therefore, my beloved brethren, be ye steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, for as much as ye know that your labor is not in vain in the Lord.
Thank you. There we get steadfast, unmovable. And Karen, what was your definition you found on abounding?
Well, yeah, I looked up abounding and it said prevailing, and then prevailing said gaining advantage, superiority or victory, having effect, persuading, succeeding. So when you put that in there, no wonder your labor is not in vain in the Lord.
Yes. Yes. But it takes that being steadfast and unmovable. Now, I got the most beautiful article again from Carrie by one of my favorite authors, Ella Hoag, which I will also share with you, because this is one of the most fundamental things about persistence and being steadfast, is what she describes here. The article is called Steadfastness. How admirable is the quality of steadfastness? Even the most thoughtless will unite in commending that which never swerves from the right, but which clings to good in spite of every attempt to unsettle it. Steadfastness is always needed if one is to be successful. It has been said that the secret of success is constancy to purpose. Steadfastness must also be said to be a necessary accompaniment to every other virtue. For without this element, each virtue would lack that which is essential to its perfection. And then the beautiful quote from Mrs. Eddy about holding thought steadfastly to the enduring, the good, and the true, and you will bring these into your experience proportionably to the occupancy of your thought. I mean, that's maybe one of the most powerful statements there is. Anyway, she goes on, holding of thought steadfastly to good should be and is divinely natural and divinely simple. But to prove this true, now this is the thing of it, we must love God so supremely that in spite of every evil argument to the contrary, and without any thought of what we shall personally gain thereby, we shall dwell steadfastly with God's good thoughts, just for the love of Him and them. That, my friend, is the key to it all, because you cannot do this humanly or with will. You have to have this love for God and for all that is good. If you do, you will be steadfast no matter what. The winds can blow, things can be very miserable, but you will not fail from standing porter at the door of your thought and standing fast, steadfastly. Then it goes on. Then it must follow, as surely as day follows night, that the beliefs in evil will disappear in the irradiance of good understood, adored, and demonstrated. Then we shall certainly be able to speak with the authority to every claim of evil because of our steadfastness in dwelling with the enduring, the good, and the true. We shall have become so convinced of the all power and all reality of good thoughts that the supposititious nature of evil thoughts will instantly be realized. What a goal is this to work for! What a privilege to cling steadfastly to good until all evil shall have been proved unreal. And let us always remember the admonition of Paul. And therefore, my beloved brethren, be ye steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord. For as much as ye know, your labor is not in vain in the Lord. And then a few other things where she says, in order to be steadfast, one must be absolutely convinced that the thing for which he stands is right and true. For no one can continuously support something in which he is not the fullest confidence. True steadfastness, therefore, must be fixed in God, divine principle, since only in absolute perfect principle can be found that which is reliable and true, that which makes for security and that which satisfies completely and permanently every holy desire and exalted purpose. Never to falter or swerve from the incessant and insistent acknowledgement of God as infinite good. Never to allow an argument of error to turn one aside for a moment from the purpose to honor God at all times, under all circumstances. This is the work which all Christian Scientists can and must accomplish. That is so wonderful, because those two things. First, your love for God. And if you don't love God, then you've got to work to where you do, because you have a false concept of him, like I did when I came here. That's why old theology is not our friend. You're afraid of him. You think he's a God of wrath or a God of far off. You've got to understand the God of love, the God of science. And then you have to have confidence that all this is true. That's why sometimes you have to take it by faith, you know, and this is Eddie says, there is no matter, or there is no sin, disease, and death. Because it's hard to comprehend all that in one foul swoop. So you have to have the confidence, and I do. I have total confidence in what she says and what Jesus says. Because I've proven enough of it to know it to be true. So therefore, if there are things I might not totally understand, I'll go with it. And I'll say, okay, I, you said it, I'll believe it. And that's why I remember Mrs. Evans was so steadfast, because we had someone who, well, I told you that one person who didn't think that women were more spiritual than men. And Mrs. Eddy says that. And anyway, that person ended up, well, I believe all this other stuff, but I don't believe that point. Or there's some points that Mrs. Eddy says that I don't accept. Well,
it's like Shmuel being turned back by that Mary anointing Jesus' feet, you know.
Oh, yes.
Just like everything else he had seen and heard.
Shmuel, yeah, those of you who saw the season 4 of The Chosen, so close to getting everything, but he couldn't accept one point, and he left.
And, you know, this is so important to really share with people that are starting to read Christian Science materials, because error is always trying that they don't go ahead. And I just said, look, if you don't believe on something or you don't agree with something, don't just drop the book. Keep on and know that, hey, I don't agree with this. I keep on because there's so much treasure there. And I think it's very important to make that point that you're talking about to new students.
Yeah,
to anybody, but yeah.
Thank you.
I also think that if you really understand who Mary Baker Eddy is, really understand that she's the woman in the apocalypse. She was the one that God used to bring Christian Science to us. Then it doesn't matter whether you understand something or not. You just have to believe it or accept it because of who the source is.
Thank you. Very important. And that is why this is such an important acknowledgement. Thank you. It's a very important acknowledgement. Just as we believe what Christ says because of who he is, we believe what Mrs. Eddy says, what's in this textbook, because of what she is. And Francis sent me this beautiful book. Francis, what was the name of the book?
The name of the book is The Light of Prophecy about Christ Jesus and Christian Science.
It has two sections. One on all these quotes is acknowledging Christ Jesus, who he is, through prophecy. And the second half, whole bunch of quotes acknowledging Mrs. Eddy as the woman in the apocalypse. Quote after quote after quote after quote. And now we have David Keeston writing a book about Mrs. Eddy being the woman in the apocalypse according to prophecy. And someone was telling me a lot of it is, you know, the prophecy is referred to as a woman, not a man. Anyway, it's all signs pointing in this direction. And yes, in order to have that confidence, thank you, Karen, you have to know who she was. She wasn't just some little nice lady who wrote a nice book that New Age sprung from. No, it's my grandson said, no.
Well, and that's why we bought Benjamin a plane ticket from Nigeria to United States many, many years ago, because he recognized that this book contained something far greater than any person could have written. He said, no person could have written this book. And what did Mrs. Eddy say herself about
she was a scribe.
She said she was a scribe under orders. And she said later in life that she herself had to go back to the textbook to study it. So I don't know anybody, I've never met anybody, who actually understands everything that there is to know about Christian Science. I find every time I read it, I learn something new. And I think that's the case for most of us, if not all of us.
There it is.
For everyone.
And an idea.
Yeah, so.
You don't understand. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no. I mean, you understand by demonstration.
Mm-hmm.
And there are things that I have to take on faith, as Mary said.
To some degree, you know, we're told that we also don't want to be belief Christian Scientists either. I found that I was believing too much, right, and not proving and demonstrating. I would encourage everyone to look and read Christian Scientists' clear, correct teachings. I'm going back through, and, you know, Eustace is very clear on you have to build your understanding up.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a very interesting take on this. I won't go into great detail here and now, but he thinks you really have to work from your understanding. There's many things you're not going to understand. If you don't understand it, you can't use it. So it's been very helpful for me in kind of building my superstructure, if you will, of what God is, of what man is. And, you know, Jesus does say, one small little understanding is all you need, because it's truth, you know?
Well, and this goes back to the original point of persistence and staying with it, because no, you're not going to get it all at once. We were broaching the topic of why it's important to see who Mrs. Eddy is and to believe what she says, sometimes even if you don't understand. But that certainly doesn't mean we shouldn't work at understanding. We definitely do need to work at understanding. And this is why we do what we do so consistently, if you will, week after week.
And persistently.
And persistently, yes.
And opening your thought for the understanding, right?
Because he's the ultimate teacher, and yes, mm-hmm. and you have to start out from where you are, what you know, whatever you do know or don't know, but you start out where you are, and you grow on that, and he is your teacher. You shouldn't get frustrated with your growth or get, you know, pushing yourself, because he will unfold to you what you need to know, always.
Yeah. And who Mr. Betty says makes it easier to know, you know, that you can understand it, just like mathematics. You know that 2 and 2 is 4, so now you can work towards that understanding of it. But knowing that it's true in the first place, because you know the source was God.
And that's when you come humble.
And you know what, about what was said before, I was going to just remind that what she said, that Christian Science is not nothing about blind faith. And I'm just saying this for people that may not know, you know, that much of Christian Science. It's not about blind faith. Everybody was saying how much to love Mary Baker Eddy and to believe in this and believe in that. But let's just make clear that it says Christian Science has nothing to do with the three monkeys and blind faith.
Thank you. The three monkeys, yes. You're no evil. Yeah, no, thank you very much. Yeah, because it's gotten a reputation.
She said it.
Yes. Oh, she said it. Good. Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Yes, it has nothing to do with that. It is understanding. But at the same time, when someone, Mrs. Eddy asked someone to do something and the person said, no, I don't understand that. And she said, well, you obey before you understand. Mm-hmm. And we have found obedience brings understanding. So some people will get, you know, I'm not going to do that. I don't understand it. Sometimes you have to go ahead and do the best you know how, and you will get where you do it. Oh, now I get why I was supposed to do that. Now it makes sense to me. So all of this requires, yes, being under the hand of God and demonstrating it. There's no fast or hard rules to this, but
it is a science.
It is a science.
And we do have to run experiments, you know, and try and fail. And,
that's right.
You know,
thank you. That's
better.
A good way. Run experiments. That's it.
Right. And that is why, as was someone just said, humility is the lens and prism.
Good point.
Without humility, you're not gonna get it.
I'm thinking, I mean, how would someone like Benjamin, never read the book before, get it that there's something here? He didn't get all of it, I'm sure, but there is something here that I can follow because of this humility. You know, God inherently, we all have the spiritual sense for him to be able to discern. My goodness, no man could have written this book. That says a lot. So humility to me is it.
It does, and it's truly a key for people who take the book and progress and also get healed because they don't have all this intellectual stuff. Well, she was a woman, or, you know, I don't, that doesn't make sense, or how can there be no matter? It does that open, humble, childlike thought that Benjamin possesses, and we've heard other people say it too. I know my mother, when she read it, Science and Health, for the first time, she said, wow, this is it. And it healed her of cancer. It was so, and it is almost shocking at first because it's so radical. the things Mrs. Eddy says, but it does make sense.
I would like to add to that that it was the same for my mom. She was given up by the medical system for, they call the highest diabetes level. And at that time, they said it was incurable. And she just said, I just want to study Christian Science. That's the last thing I will do if I'm going to die, so-called. And she was completely healed.
Thank you.
I'm sure it's an experience for many people. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah,
absolutely. And you don't need very many experiences like that to know that there's something.
Really. That's right. Yeah.
Got to have your eyes open.
And that's where the confidence comes from, and then the persistence, right?
Yes. Correct. And I've had people tell me, you know, after listening to the roundtable, it's like, well, you know, you guys are too much for me. I can't deal too much. And so, well, what's too much? What's too little? I mean, I don't know. You come along at your own pace. Whatever is in your heart, you can't do anything more. That beautiful quote in the miscellany, you can't do more than what is ripening within you. So
if I come almost full, then... If I come almost full, then yeah. Of course this is too much.
That's right. That's right. True. You've already got your own outline.
There's no room for these new ideas.
No. You've got your agenda that you're going to do. Yeah. So you have to have a sense of, yes, the humility and openness to it. And very much, who was telling me? It was only because they had such a terrible time in mortal existence, that they were ready. You have to be ready for this. And I look around, and most everyone here said, I was saying I was going to give the prize to who had the worst childhood. Because everybody worse. But you see, it brings you to a point where you're ready to accept this, because the human has offered no good thing. Mrs. Eddy says, mortal existence has not been kind enough to me to want me to linger in it or something. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I never heard something like that. The worst, like a contest for the worst, but childhood. I can tell it was just Error wanted you to bring that to everybody and rehearse Error and keep on getting people deeper into the error. You know.
Yes. Well.
Well, it's just the point is.
Yeah.
People have to be really dissatisfied with the mortal dream before they will really open up their hearts to something new and different.
Thank you for that point.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. That's the point.
People in prison, sometimes they just turn around because they've hit the bottom, lost, you know, here I am.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Those who seem fine in the mortal existence, you know, you can't, you've got to leave them alone until they're ready, because they're not interested. And that's okay. We're all at different states and stages, Mrs. Eddy says.
And you know, what did Jesus mean when he said, don't cast your pearls before swine?
Yeah. Hmm.
You don't offer Christian Science to someone who is so satisfied with materialism and the mortal dream, that they will trample on your pearls. Mm-hmm. Wait for them to be ready.
Yeah, I was thinking a few weeks ago that self-interest is the opposite of receptivity. You know, we often include receptivity in our watches and making sure that the message is getting to someone who wants it. And it's largely because they are no longer self-interested, at least to some degree.
Thank you. And it's why really we don't market ourselves in a kind of a human sort of a way, because God knows who needs us, and God will bring those people to us. Otherwise, we're humanly getting involved in God's work. What did you send me this week?
Well, I thought it was very interesting, and it fits in with everything that's been talked about, that Mrs. Eddy used the word, if we don't give up, we're not going to stop wearing clothes, we're not going to stop eating, but we must, as she says, the human self must be evangelized. And I thought, holy cow. So I looked it up, and that's instructed in the gospel. And then on page 271 in Science and Health, she talks about the modern evangel, those who are willing to leave their nets or to cast them on the right side for truth, have the opportunity now, as in aforetime, to learn and to practice Christian healing. The scriptures contain it. The spiritual import of the word, capital, imparts this power. But, as Paul says, how shall they hear without a preacher? And how shall they preach, except they be sent? If sent, how shall they preach, convert, and heal multitudes, except the people hear? And to me, that is hear Science and Health.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah, and this is the evangelization process that's going on, changing us and into more and more His image and likeness. And I love God is able to make all grace abound toward you. That word grace, it's the same thing. The definition I love, spirit or influence of God operating in man, it's operating in you, to strengthen and to regenerate you. And regenerate is to plant holy affections in the heart. To plant holy affections in the heart. So, you know, maybe you see someone who doesn't seem to be a lover of God and good, doesn't seem to love good. Well, grace is going to change that person. So he has those holy affections. He even, yes, as Florence said, in a prison cell, he's ready to change and have these holy affections where he loves God. Before you go, Jeremy, read the responsive reading 15, first one.
Study to show thyself approved unto God, a workman that needeth not to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth.
Thank you. And Carrie sent me a few articles about being a workman and how important that is. And one very sobering by Blanche Hersey Hogue, A Workman Approved. It says, to the onlooker, Christian Science appears no better in any community than the Christian Scientists themselves appear. He who knows little or nothing of the teaching of Christian Science is very likely to judge it by the conduct of his adherents. Mm. But then she goes on, that people who have not understood the science and have been observed, they have not been a workman. They have not been persistent. They haven't really read the textbook. They haven't really done these things we've just talked about for the last almost hour. And then they turn people off to the science. And isn't this what we have seen? And we're left to pick up those pieces. So please, if you're going to name the name, get on your knees and walk the walk. It takes all this work. And if you're not interested, that's okay. Then don't pretend to be something to be. But you
and
must,
don't claim to be a Christian Scientist.
Yeah.
Please.
Please. Yeah. And I, you know, that goes for, I'm speaking of myself. And Mrs. Eddy says in Science and Health, if the student goes away to practice truth's teaching only in part, dividing his interest between God and mammon, and substituting his views for truth, his own views for truth, he will inevitably reap the error he sows. Whoever would demonstrate the healing of Christian Science must abide strictly by its rules, heed every statement, and advance from the rudiments laid down. There is nothing difficult nor toilsome in this task when the way is pointed out. But self-denial, sincerity, Christianity, and persistence alone win the prize, as they usually do in every department of life. So it's not like she didn't tell us, right? It's not like she's not telling. Right there.
Yeah. This goes really well for all those people that are, you know, have posted online lies about Christian Science and how bad it is and how it didn't work with them. but they don't tell that, oh, I wasn't consistent, I wasn't persistent, I didn't even really study, or if I didn't understand, I didn't go back to see, let me see, maybe I don't understand. And then, of course, it cannot work. And then they go and post all these things because they never understood. They were never persistent. Yes. And so they couldn't demonstrate it. And people must know this because there are many things online against Christian Science from people that don't really know, never got to really read and understand what it was about.
Thank you. Yes. No, that's right. And this isn't in, you know, many of us have not proven Christian Science. Many of us probably have regrets we didn't know better at the time. All of us do. Believe me, I do. Believe me, even in the middle of Mrs. Evans, I have many, I wish I'd known more at the time than I might know now. So this is in no way condemnation of anyone who hasn't proven maybe something they just weren't ready to prove yet. But this is about going forward. And what's been done has been done. We learned lessons from whatever it was, and we can be grateful for those lessons learned and go forward in realizing, you know, there's just more to learn. And there's never any condemnation. And we have been taught here and taught well that if a person does pass on under Christian Science treatment, that person is far, far, far ahead, light years ahead of where he would have been, he or she, if they had not had that those prayers going out. It's a very important thing to know. So if you were praying for something or some situation and it didn't work out, whatever the situation is far more advanced than it ever would have been if those prayers had not been given. And also, in the lesson, good demands of man every hour in which to work out the problem of being. Consecration to good does not lessen man's dependence on good, but heightens it. Neither does consecration diminish man's obligations to God, but shows the paramount necessity of meeting them. Again, it's over and over on this lesson, and this is how to prove true substance, what's real and spiritual. And so we will end now.
This is an article written by Irving Tomlinson entitled The Nearness of God from a 1904 issue. And he writes, I have been helped of late in thinking of the nearness of God. In Isaiah 55, we read, Seek ye the Lord while he may be found. Call ye upon him while he is near. The Christ was foretold as Emmanuel, God with us. And through the help given us in Christian Science, it is our blessed privilege at this time to prove that God is with us. God is indeed near us when we truly know him and reflect his love. The psalmist says, For that thy name is near, thy wondrous works declare. When our eyes are open, we find God near in the bending heavens, in the opening flower, in the love light that shines forth from the child's eyes. Let us train ourselves to know that God is near when two hearts beat in kindly sympathy, when a true word is spoken to an open ear, when a loving deed of kindness is welcomed by a grateful heart, when selfishness gives way to sacrifice and pride falls before humility, when resentment is banished and brotherly love floods the heart. As the poet says, Then, brother man, fold to thy heart thy brother, for where love dwells, the peace of God is there. To worship rightly is to love each other, each smile a hymn, each kindly deed a prayer. And that's John Greenleaf Whittier, hymn number 217.
Thank you all so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.